Welcome everybody to this meeting of the members of Central Tablelands Water County Council. I declare this meeting officially opened, and in doing so I want to acknowledge the Wiradjuri people, the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and extend that to any First Nations people who are here or who are listening to the recording of this meeting. This meeting will be recorded and a recording posted to Council's website after the meeting. The basis on which it's been recorded is set out in the business paper. Moving on to item four, apologies and applications for leave of absence. Mr General Manager,
yes.
I believe we have one.
Mr Chair, Councillor Marlene Nash has an apology for this meeting.
Thank you. Someone like to move that that be accepted and that leave of absence be granted?
Mm-hmm.
I had a move by Councillor Best, second by Councillor Rawson. Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. That's carried. On to item five, confirmation of the minutes of the previous meeting, which have been circulated in our October meeting. Someone like to move that be accepted a correct record? Councillor Rawson, seconded by Councillor Ewan?
No.
Oh, Ewan, what's it? I think you can still second it, but anyway.
Well, I could.
No, it doesn't. Okay.
They look like they're pretty good.
Seconded by Councillor Best, I think. Thank you. Those in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. Thank you. Any matters arising anyone wants to raise? Not dealt with otherwise? No. If not, we will move on to item seven, disclosures of interest, Mr General Manager. Do we have any?
No, we don't, Mr Chair.
Thank you. Moving on to public forum. I gather we have no public forum today.
That's correct.
So I'll move on to item nine, Chairman's Minute, which will be just as quick because there is no Chairman's Minute. Then moving on to item 10, Councillor Representation. If I can go first there. 17th of October, we had an online meeting organised by DPE Water in relation to the Macquarie-Bogan Water Sharing Plan. On the 23rd to the 25th of October, I attended, along with the General Manager and Councillor Cook, the Local Government New South Wales Annual Conference. 2nd of November, I attended, along with Councillor Rawson and Councillor Cook, the General Manager's Annual Performance Review. 24th of November, there was a online board meeting of the joint organisation, which I attended. And on the 23rd of November, as an alternate for Councillor Nash, I attended the meeting of the Audit, Risk and Improvement Committee.
Yep.
That's my representation. Other councillors?
Mine's captured by what you've just said.
I've already mentioned that. I think Councillor Rawson and Councillor Cook. Are there any others that I haven't mentioned?
There was one which was in the business papers about an online forum. It was for the water sharing, or there were some plans that were, I'm just trying to see where it is.
Well, that might
water
be
water webinar on the 17th of October.
Yes, that was, I think, the first one I mentioned, which was an online forum dealing with the Macquarie-Bogan water sharing plan.
Yep, I was at that one too.
Oh, you had that one too. Yep.
Yep.
Okay, if there's nothing further, those will be recorded in the minutes. And we'll move on to item 11, notices of motion.
There are
no notices of motion. So we'll move on to the bulk of the meeting dealing with reports of staff, which is item 12. I'd like to change the order in which we deal with these. I'd like to move straight away to item 12.9, the annual financial statements and the auditor's report. We have a presentation from Leanne Smith in relation to our financial statements for the year end of 30 June 2022. So I'd like to welcome Leanne to our meeting.
Hello, Leanne. You there? Can you hear us?
Hello.
Hello, how are you going?
I can't hear you.
done here. So I'll pull this one out.
That one.
Yep, so we've just got three. Let's see how that goes.
Can you hear me now, Leanne?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. Can you hear me now?
I hear you. I'll come back.
Yep, one chap on the right is nodding.
Hello, Marvick. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Technical difficulties, I guess, with Leanne.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can hear you loud and clear, Marvick.
Okay. That's good. Thank you.
Thank you. So, welcome to our meeting, and we're looking forward to your presentation on our financial position.
Can you hear us, Leanne?
Yay!
Yay, there you go.
That was better. Oh, sorry, and I was having a few technical glitches with Teams. It was not happy, so seems to be happy now.
That's good. Strong. So we've got all the councillors here except for Councillor Marlene Nash, who's an apology. But all the other councillors are here to, I'm waiting your presentation.
Right, so you've done all your preliminaries. You're ready for us to just jump straight in.
Yes, that's right.
We are, yes. Yeah, we.
Excellent, all right.
We cleared the way.
I'll just share my screen. Is that what we're doing, Gav?
Yes, yeah. Peter and I tested it last night and it worked, so hopefully,
Got that now?
Yes.
Yeah. Beautiful. All right. Okay. Well, and I have the 14th of December on there. Sorry I didn't update that for your change in your meeting. So probably just the first couple of slides, probably just want to touch base on a couple of items that the audit office is looking at. So the work program for 2022 through to 2025, there was a focus primarily as a result of the bushfires. There's been a focus on emergency response across New South Wales that will obviously continue to extend to some of the more recent flood and storm disasters going forward. And there's also been an increased focus on cybersecurity over the last year or two, and that is going to continue going forward. Some of the reports they're looking at for 2022-23 is into, again, cybersecurity, and also obviously the local government report to Parliament for 2022 will be completed next year. Some of the future areas they're looking at are in relation to performance management, road asset, code of conduct, things like that. A number of them are obviously more relevant to a general purpose council than what they are to the Central Tablelands Water. And again, moving into the report to Parliament for next year, it'll be looking again at key management letter report themes that are coming through and where the councils have followed up on prior year recommendations. And again, cybersecurity and IT general controls. So, probably, sorry, did anybody have, and I can't see anybody, so I don't know. did anybody have any queries on any of that briefly before I jump into CTW?
No.
Oh, there is everyone.
Yeah,
is that better? Is there any questions at all?
No, that's fine, thank you,
No worries. Okay. So I guess the result that we had for council for the year was an operating result, including capital, of just over $1 million. And after capital grants and contributions came out, that was just below break even with a loss of $463,000 before capital for the year. In terms of operating revenue, so there's a total of $7.8 million in operating revenue for the year compared to $7.5 the prior year. Nothing too significant's moved around in there. There's been a little bump up in user charges for the year, even though the water charges were lower than what was budgeted. They were actually slightly higher than they were in the previous financial year. And obviously, there's been relative to 2019, where we had the capital grants and contributions for the Carcorp to Orange. There's obviously been not too much of a change in capital grants and contributions in the last year or two. Operating expenditure, so it's sitting at $6.7 million for the year, which is down on the prior year at $7.3. The main mover there has been depreciation, and there's been a reduction in that depreciation figure compared to the prior year. There was a full revaluation of the water assets this year, so we'll expect that number to start moving back upwards again. Be my expectation. I think Peter would probably agree with that.
He is nodding.
Yeah.
He's nodding, yes. Yeah. In terms of cash investments, not a huge amount of movement there. It's gone up a little bit. CTW doesn't actually have a lot of externally restricted funds. There's some large internal allocations, not restrictions anymore, but I guess the fact that, you know, you're not sort of constrained by those external restrictions as some of the general purpose councils are, so you do have some capacity there in terms of available cash for the projects that have been earmarked in terms of the internal restrictions that are there. Operating performance ratio, so it's sitting down below the benchmark, so the benchmark is zero. So this ratio is looking at where the council is containing its operating expenditure with its operating revenue. So it excludes the impact of capital grants and contributions. Given the nature of CTW and its operations and reliance on capital grants for those large projects, you're below the benchmark. That's not something that anyone, either ourselves or the audit office, is flagging as a concern. It's quite typical to see a county council in that situation because of the constraints around your ability to generate revenue from alternate revenue streams. The unrestricted current ratio is looking at council's capacity, so how many unrestricted current assets council has to pay its current liabilities. So the benchmark for that is 1.5. Council is sitting up around 13 at the moment. Probably one of the things I would just flag, and I probably should have at the start, with these ratios for Central Tablelands Water, because your numbers, your dollar figures are quite small, you can see really large jumps in these ratios that can be driven by quite small dollar figures. So even though that looks like it's moved significantly, that's because it's coming off a relatively small dollar figure base. And then the other one that is just highlighted in here is in relation to the annual water charges, interest and extra charges, outstanding percentage. There's no formal benchmark for this ratio. So this is looking at the extent to which your rate, with a general purpose council, it would be rates and annual charges. So the extent to which those are outstanding. CTW obviously doesn't have rates. So there's no actual benchmark for this, but the benchmark for a general purpose council in a regional and rural area would be 10%. So the expectation is that it would be below 10%. So the result of 7.28 for the year, and the fact that that's on a downward trend, is a really, really pleasing result as well. The last year or two, we've actually seen most councils seeing a little uptick in that ratio because debt recovery has been limited during COVID. So it's pleasing to see that that number is actually coming down. Renewals this year were just under $1 million, and then there were new asset additions of 1.35. There was a full revaluation of the water infrastructure assets completed this year. That resulted in a $13.6 million increase in the asset values and the revaluation reserve. And that, as I mentioned before, that is obviously going to drive an increase in depreciation going forward because the base on which the depreciation is calculated has escalated. The other thing I probably just wanted to touch on briefly, knowing that you've probably seen presentations from your own constituent councils, there was a requirement this year for councils to complete a review of the fair value of the rest of their asset classes because of the escalating costs that we've seen across the board throughout the last couple of years with COVID. That exercise was conducted for Central Tablelands Water, but it was determined that the amounts involved did not need to be adjusted and weren't material in some instances. So I probably just wanted to close that off to say it's not that the exercise wasn't done. The exercise was done, but it was determined that an adjustment wasn't required. The bulk of the rest of your assets are obviously land and buildings. There's no roads, infrastructure or anything like that that needed to be taken into account. That's the bulk of the items that we wanted to touch on, but I am happy to take questions if there are any.
Leanne, it's David here.
Hello, David.
Hi.
I'd be disappointed if you didn't have a question.
That's right. I didn't want to disappoint you. I had to find something. The thing that sort of looked a bit strange on interest revenue, on your bar graphs there, over the last 4 years, it's been trending down. And, you know, the interest rates themselves have been, apart from perhaps towards the end of 2022.
Yep. Are you asked why it's gone up, David?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, is that yep. an indication that we had a lot more money on deposit in the two earlier years?
No, it is an indication that you charged overdue user charges and annual charges more interest.
Ah.
So if I'm looking at your numbers here, you got, in 2021, you had $48,000 in income from interest on cash investments.
Yeah.
And in 2022, you had $49,000 from cash and investments. But interest on overdue annual charges and user charges went up from 11 to 18.
Because
that's what that spike.
Because we had more overdue debtors, or because we charged them higher interest?
No, if I can just, I'll just answer that one. There was a moratorium that the OLG had in place that you couldn't charge interest on overdue accounts for a period of time, I think, in 2021.
I remember.
And that contributed to the lower figure in 2021.
Okay, that explains it. Yep. That explains it. So I always think of interest revenue mostly as interest on our deposits, but in fact we get interest on overdue accounts.
Yeah. Certainly, and as Leanne's indicated, with some of our numbers, obviously, where some of our numbers are quite low, so if one of those components goes up by a relatively small amount, the overall percentage
And those two earlier years with the higher numbers was before the moratorium came in, the pre-COVID stuff. Yeah, okay. That's very clear. Thank you. Are there any other questions?
When you did the fair asset review, does that include the actual infrastructure, like the network itself, the complete network?
Yes, complete infrastructure network. Yes.
Okay. So even the increasing cost, all the increasing costs, you just didn't think it was necessary to revalue.
We did.
Sorry, are you talking about the indexation exercise?
Yes, at the end, yeah.
Yes. So with the indexation exercise, so we didn't need to look at the water network because there was a full revaluation conducted by an external valuer for the water network this year. So it was booked in total. With the indexation, the only other assets that Central Tablelands Water has is buildings and some land. And then one of the big things was when we looked at the land, a really large component of your land, and I can't remember if it's at Barry or if it's at Neville, a large component of this is the catchment area
around Lake Rylands
that is in that region. So when you think about, well, putting a market index on a piece of land that is in a catchment zone and you can't do anything with, we came to the agreement that it wasn't necessarily an appropriate basis on which to do it. So once the water network was taken out and once that piece of land was taken out, there wasn't actually much left in terms of dollar value. So that's kind of where that got to.
Okay. And we are actually doing a full reevaluation of operational land and buildings this year.
Okay. Oh. 2023,
so it's currently underway at the moment.
Oh. And is that a three-year cycle for our water assets?
It's five years in the code, unless there's a material change, and you can do it more frequently. If you believe there's a material change in the valuation, you're required to do it more frequently. But there's nothing preventing you from doing it more frequently. The only thing I'd say with the water assets, we do index them by the Office of Water Rates each year. So that was sort of my expectation with the reval, that it wasn't going to be as substantial as it was, because we had been indexing the figures along the way between the two revaluations. So the figure of 13.6 million was higher than my expectation.
I suppose it reflects the fact that construction costs have gone through the roof in the last 12 months. Yeah. And so replacement costs, a lot of our assets are, if it had been valued a year earlier, you wouldn't have expected much increase. But just this year, once you get around to doing it and you see what construction costs are, All right, any more questions? Yes, Andrew.
Just a quick one. Has there been any attempt to model the income fluctuations according to climate fluctuations? You know, we do have an income which fluctuates quite a bit according to, you know, whether it's been wet for a long period of time or really dry, really hot and dry. Has there been any attempts to model the sensitivity of our income stream to those climatic fluctuations?
Oh, well, I'm quite happy to take that question on board. When we do the estimate for our water sales, we do it over an historic period, which is about 20 years, the most recent one that we did. So we certainly capture the droughts and the wetter periods during that 20-year period. Obviously, if you're talking about climate change in the broad sense over a millennia, no, we haven't. And we don't actually sort of look at it in terms of an overriding model that says that this year you would expect that you would have to discount by a certain amount because of these climatic factors are in play. So we don't have the level of sophistication in our modelling to do what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether with climate change, you know, hitting us, and B, as a better indication of our performance, you know, we can standardise against those climatic fluctuations. We, you know, they're expected fluctuations. They're expected changes in our income stream. You factor them out, and then that gives us a better sense of how we're performing.
You could possibly come up with a model on that basis. The only thing I would say, obviously, with the two most recent droughts, they've been within a fairly short period of time, and historically a short period of time. So even if you had a model that you did do that way, you wouldn't probably have captured the impact of the second drought that particularly well, because you wouldn't have expected to get a two droughts within such a short period of time.
In a
practical response, I suppose, would be that when we get to doing our budget for next year in March, April, May, rather than budgeting on water sales based on the 20-year, you know, moving average or whatever it is, you'd pay a little bit more attention to what the long-range forecast is.
Well, I think in answer to that is the expectation from the experts was it was unlikely that the La Nina would go into a third term. That was highly... Yeah. The probability of that is quite small.
Yeah.
So it would have been difficult to pick that up. We have historically had 2 years where we've had lower, high rainfall. But to get that third year is something that certainly in that 20-year block that I've looked at, I haven't looked pre-2000, would be very unusual.
So it would be even more unusual to get four in a row.
It would be extremely unusual.
In which case, when we get to the budgeting next year, we should look fairly positively on increasing water sales.
Correct.
Yes.
That's certainly how I'm looking at it.
Mm. Yeah.
At this stage.
Mm. You can see the gleam in his eye. Interest rates are going up.
We love droughts.
But it's getting drier.
Don't forget we have got yours just on the screen.
Yeah. Oh, but they need to hear this.
We don't keep anything from the auditors.
No, they ask a question.
Open and transparent.
Open and transparent.
Riverina Water also have a mechanism in place where in the good years they put in they've got a reserve set up to increase that reserve in the good years. So when there are droughts or if there is excess rainfall in that in the following years, water sales are down.
Yeah.
They can draw on that reserve.
So we've spoken about that before.
Yeah, that's an income equalisation or revenue equalisation reserve, or to use the audit office. The audit office description, they call it an allocation. They don't call it a reserve, a cash reserve or a restriction. That's an issue of some academic, some debate within the industry. But it's certainly something that we could look at. But what you've got to bear in mind, if you're running that reserve, it means that you're any cash surpluses you make, which are now transferred into your infrastructure restriction.
Some part of it.
A large part of that would go to the revenue equalisation reserve, which would actually lock that cash up for that purpose, for those poorer years. It wouldn't be available for your infrastructure. So that's your
unless we voted to take some about for that reserve.
You would have to positively vote that, yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm. And probably the other thing is that wouldn't fix your income and expenditure, your income issue, because it's only a cash movement.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it would equalise, it would set aside cash, so your working capital would be preserved.
Yeah.
I mean,
it would change whether you had an increase in income or income from one year to another, even though. Yeah,
my initial reason for the question was really to get a better sense of what would be expected by these fluctuations, because we know these fluctuations exist. And you said that in your presentation, that you didn't feel that any of these ratios, you know, the operating performance ratio was of great concern, simply because county councils do have these large fluctuations, and ours in particular. So it's just it gives us a better, if we understand the sensitivity of our income stream to these fluctuations, then we would have a much better sense of the actual performance of the organisation. Yeah.
The only thing I would say in terms of Leanne's comments about the operating ratio is we aim to make a surplus. That's what we aim.
Yeah.
That surplus gives us money we can put into our infrastructure restriction. I'll use the term restriction rather than allocation, but restriction for future capital works.
Mm.
So it's obviously in our best interest to try and manage both our revenue and expenditure to get that result. From an industry point of view, there's a lot of statistics now where they look and they say, basically, if you've had five operating losses before capital, then you've got a financial sustainability issue and you really need to look at things in a different way, or how are you going to move your long-term plan forward to make it on a sustainable footing. A number of councils, I think, have actually had what they call a sustainability review. I think Blaney Council might have had something like that, where they look at that sort of thing. So certainly, from our point of view, we can't continue for a protracted period having operating losses before capital. So in terms of our, when we're setting our pricing, setting our budgets, we need to bear that in mind. And that's really part of the criteria that's used to set the fees and charges as well.
Do you factor that in if we're talking about in future borrowing for such a big capital event like Rowlands?
Yes, I've factored that in currently. It's currently in the long-term financial plan. I've factored it in. The big uncertainty there is the timing and also the cost.
Yeah, of course.
and the contribution that another sphere of government will give us. I've based it on a 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be 50-50. It could be something different.
Yeah, because you think the impact will be greater than 5 years, though, like as far as operating costs, you think?
Well, your funding costs would probably be over 20 years based on a fixed loan arrangement. You could look at your loan arrangements and look at some sort of, if you want to take 10-year fixed and then 10-year reset, you could do that as well. There's various options there. I'm just my experience tells me to try and fix it so you've got the certainty in the future. If you leave it to a refunding point, say after 10 years, and then you've got to go out on the market at that time, you're really taking a punt on what the financing cost environment's going to be at that point in time. If you want to take that risk, that's something the council can certainly look at. But I like the certainty of having a fixed rate.
Can I just start over the auditors? Just, is that something that you participate in? If like when Peter here is, it's a pretty big thing for the council if we're talking about borrowing a lot of money for late rolling. Is that something you participate in, helping the council make that decision?
No.
Not at all.
No.
I was just thinking, you look back and I know they're the police, but you can ask,
And the reason for it is that how do you independently audit that you've been involved in making that decision?
Just putting it out there. The more experience, the better. Put it that way.
But in answer, to complete the answer to that question, we could certainly look at if council were predisposed to getting someone independent to look at those scenarios and work with council on those scenarios.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. I know you're capable, Peter.
No, I'm not taking it that way at all.
Yeah.
If we can get the expertise in and get a few more ideas, that's fine.
Yeah. Things like the best way to structure a 10 or 20 year loan.
Of course.
With balloon payments in good years. And reduce payments for cash flow point of view wet years. You could come up with some creative ways to cushion the effect of having to service the loan, roughly equivalent to
of course cash flow. If you're sort of arbitraging all those things, there is an element of risk, of course, financial risk, but it's a question of whether that's
minimum
something the council wants to take, which by all means it can be looked at.
When we get there. It's a good discussion. Now, any other questions for Leanne?
No.
Yeah, Gav.
I haven't got a question. I just want to thank Leanne and Marvick and Mary for helping us out again this year to conduct the audit. Once again, they were very flexible. We had John Stewart, unfortunately, became unwell leading up to the audit, and they were able to move dates around, which really helped us. So, thank you. Once again, we appreciate your support that you give us and advice. And Merry Christmas.
Not at all. Enjoy the rest of your meeting.
Merry Christmas.
Bye.
I just heard Gav say your advice. Not that sort of advice. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn.
All right. I think they have a pretty good grasp of our business, like now after doing the audit, that was all right.
Yeah, but they're reluctant to. They can't for the independence rules to become involved in those sort of things. They can report on them, but that's about it.
It just seems a pity.
Okay. Well, that was a useful discussion with our auditors, so thanks for organising that. We'll move back to the agenda in the order of the business paper, item 12.1, report on the Central New South Wales Joint Organisation Board meeting. Someone like to move the recommendation? Councillor Best, seconded Councillor Ewan. Thank you very much. Any questions in relation to that meeting of Gavin or myself?
Any further? Did you want to say anything further from that?
I suppose the one point I would make in relation to the JO, a couple of interesting developments. One is that things are underway for Lithgow to rejoin the joint organisation. They were part of the original Centroc, and then there was a move on their council to align themselves more with Western Sydney and Blue Mountains. So they didn't join Central New South Wales JO. They aligned themselves with the Western Region Rock, I think it was called. But they've had a rethink, and there's been discussions with the general manager of Lithgow and Jenny Bennett and other GMs, and The result is that Lithgow have been welcome to join. There's a various gazettals that are required to enable that to happen, but the process is underway. So that's interesting. Second thing is they're also in the process of changing their policy to actually implement an allowance for the chairman, $10,000 allowance for the chairman. Up till now, it's the chair, in fact, no fees are payable to board members at all, but in recognition of the extra workload of the chairman, the proposal is that we amend the constitution to allow for a $10,000 allowance for the chairman. So that's underway. And the other thing, it's reported in here somewhere when we were talking to Olivia West, who's the head of regional New South Wales, what's it called? RDA?
Yeah, she's regional New South Wales.
Yeah. Who had a big participation in the meeting. She's a board member ex officio. She's very keen to help out on funding for drought relief measures, etc., for councils. And I raised with her some lobbying for water county councils to actually be eligible for grants, where in the past it's only general purpose councils that get this emergency relief. She was sympathetic with that. She wants to take that forward, and she did point out that in fact some of the councils up in the northern rivers have been affected by flooding. They have changed their policy now, and they've actually made grants to Water County, I assume it's RAS, Water County councils up there, or for general purpose councils for their water assets. So there's precedent for that now, and we need to follow up in relation to that. So that was very positive, actually. She thought that's something that ought to happen.
Yeah.
And that's been said. Can a general purpose council that actually runs their own water, for instance, Cowra, can they access that funding as a general purpose and use it on their water infrastructure?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah.
No. The government theory, of course, is that the water utility business, whether it's our only business like us or part of the business of a GP council, ought to be self-sustaining because there's no cap on your ability to charge fees. You ought to be operating commercially, and you ought to be raising enough money to put aside for the emergencies when they come around. That's the theory.
I think that would have been a good point to argue that was if they're already accessing it.
That's about all I think on the debt. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything further, Dave. I think you covered that.
I think on page seven on my screen, I'm not sure it's page two of the thing, it's got your bit, David, about advocacy for water utilities. And after that, it's got a bit about one source of truth and effective communication pathways. And I think Andrew and I both know on that morning when that hit, that I think is something that you need to look at. It's probably not a water issue thing, but that one source of truth, because we were sitting there trying to work out what was going on and no one could get messages in or out. I was trying to text him from one spot in the little evac centre, and he's talking to the mayor and we actually were ringing Gavin. So I thank Gavin for taking those calls that day and saying, this is what's going on here in the ground, and being told about the boiled water and the, you know, people don't drink anything, and we, you know, it'd be 24 hours since we'd eaten or drunk, and Gavin was able to bring in some supplies. So, because we couldn't get messages in or out unless it was one spot on your left foot turning to the left, you know. But having that source that I thought to ring Gavin, it was dropping in and out, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But he persevered, and I'm like, I've got 2 seconds to talk and passing messages, and he was then able to get us information on what was going on.
Yeah.
So having that back up, I think, was even if it's walkie-talkies, you know, going back to old-fashioned type things that you need to look at for staff or whatever it is.
Yeah, we have got two-way radios in all the vehicles too, because we have that issue with reception in mobile reception in
different areas. What's their range?
It's a government network, so whatever repeaters. So we tap into all government radio networks, so railways, things like that, wherever there's a repeater. So we don't have a coverage problem where we are in our system.
Yeah, just because it was there and I was like, yeah, that was something that happened on that day that Andrew and I were trying to get messages out.
So there is the ability to get an app on your phone to hook into our government radios.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but you pay handsomely for it. But for those sorts of emergencies, we can get that that access to you.
Yeah, because we had someone come to our county, our general council the other day, and unfortunately I missed it because I didn't get there. But and I asked, is there an option to do something where, like an SES, but it then goes offline, so you could go and get someone to upload it.
Yes.
And then you could go back and have that information available because, you know, you can't connect to the internet.
Yes.
Like a bit like a Spotify, you know, you can have your downloads or you can have it downloaded and then go back to it. And I said, something like that would be good to look at for disaster management, like a dashboard that you can hook into.
We have looked with the government radio network to have the ability to utilise data rather than just talk, because that would be a good backup system for our telemetry systems and things like that. Yeah. So we have explored that. It's not quite available, but they have taken that on board to look at. But it's very low amounts of data, but telemetry can use very low amounts of data just to get those essential things through. But, it'd be nice to have your feedback back, and I'm sure that we've got things in place now that can be put forward to assist on the short term.
And it's long until you go through some of that. We were sitting there, weren't we, trying to work out how to get a message back and what's going on. And luckily, because I drove up the hill at Cadell to talk to Gavin, and it just still kept dropping out. Like, this is, we need water here, because this is what's going on. So thank you again for dropping that off. And
anything we could do to help. And
I suppose the volume of traffic on all these networks too.
Well, I'm known to go to text when it's some like that, and there's a lot of people trying to make a phone call to text, because a text will usually go through. But see, like what we would on our farm, because we've got radio networks in the cars and stuff. Chris was driving down to our neighbour to get him to talk so he could talk to his wife, say we're okay. And I'm like, this is just what you got to do. Drive around and use the radios. But it was just more of that meeting, and it was like, it was that whole disaster. And I suppose I've spoken to someone from SES as well, and they said, we're focusing on the disaster. And we're going, we wanted you to focus on the disaster. But in the meantime, we couldn't get messages to the community of what they needed to do. And basically, wasn't there? There was people just sitting around going, well, what should I do? And it's like, we just have to wait.
I think there will be a debriefing about there will be amongst all of the emergency services.
Yeah.
And one would hope that you would be involved in that.
Yeah. Well, Noel was involved in the meetings, got regular meetings, and wasn't Noel every two hours or something like that during the disaster. And then I know there was a follow-up after that, but I assume too there will be a...
They'll have to, I'm talking about months down the track, there'll be a review of what happened. And CCW should be involved in that because, you had a role, very much a role.
We weren't initially, so...
Yeah, which is strange,
work on that LENT area.
Yeah, but one would hope that will change, because I would have thought providing water to a flood-stricken location or any stricken location is pretty important.
Presumably the GP councils were in that local
level. Cabal was fantastic. Yeah. They knew that, CTW is not involved, gave us a call, put us on, gave me a bit of an idea of what's going to be required, made ourselves available. It was as simple as that. And sometimes it's not there to start with, but it's people who understand on the ground.
I think it's having those protocols in place, but I know Steve Cook, because one of our neighbours, she actually came looking for him and said, I hear you haven't been able to get home for a week. Like, yep. And you've got no access to it. And he's like, yep. So she's fully aware of things like that were going on. I just noticed it because I was like, we do need that one source of truth,
yeah,
so that people can just know where they have to access the information, access it, and then you know it. Like, even like in airlines, we used to have TAFORs and METARs come out at like 10 o'clock, like every 4 hours, and you knew that there was a METAR coming out at 0000. So you would look for that. If you were before or after, you would know which what you were looking for. So it's knowing that information and what time it would be released that you could get into it. Anyway,
yeah.
We diverge.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for that. Any more questions on the JO report? If not, I think we've had a move and a second. Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. 12.2, the annual conference for LG New South Wales, a report on that, which, as I said earlier, I was there with Councillor Cook and the General Manager. Yeah, good conference, some good papers, very stimulating. Oh, yes, thanks. Hey, do you want to add anything? It's a good report, well worth attending. Any other?
I was just going to touch on through you, Mr. Chair. The conference was once again a great opportunity to network, obviously, with the other councils within the state, GP councils as well as county councils. In my report there, you can see there's a number of motions that were considered, 157 in total. So it is a long day for the main part of the conference, but it's very worthwhile. The thing I noted in there was about the panel session on the last day, with the Minister for Local Government as well as the Shadow Minister and the Roads Minister and a couple of others there. But that was quite entertaining, and I thought that was well received and formative as well, and well received. So, but I know Councillor Cook was very impressed with another presentation with the demographic.
The demographics that on the day, and then I attended the one on the Sunday. That was a really, and I've sent it to Gavin if anyone else wants to view the Sunday one. The demographics was fantastic.
It was good, wasn't it?
Well, it was sort of describing the generations and what motivates people. So, you know, and I think in general, we're more comfortable talking with people and not comfortable with IT, whereas the younger people are comfortable with IT, but they hate talking to people.
Yeah.
You're just like,
yeah. We've all had teenagers, so we understand that.
But as teenagers, they're still, when they're 30, they're still going to be acting like teenagers because that's what they've been brought up to be like.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a very interesting statement, because how are you going to have offices with organisations of people communicating and collaborating when they don't know how to do that?
Can't agree more. When your kids, rather than send you a text message, than ring you. Yeah. And you text back and you say, why can't we talk about this?
Yeah. Or you get 20 text messages saying, I'll meet you here.
Bang, the police comes straight back and it just goes ping, 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 ping.
But you don't get a response.
Yeah, well, there is that too.
No, it was a good analysis, because they also looked at the approach to work of each of the generation. You're going from baby boomers who live to work to the next generation work to live, and then I've forgotten what the catchphrases were for the next two or three generations, but all quite interesting, and all rang very true, actually.
And all of us are probably in that sandwich generation where we've worked hard to earn our stripes, and then we're going to be leapfrogged by younger kids because we don't have enough people in our generation to sustain all the positions that we need to fill. It's like, that's very interesting.
And of course, Sam Faraway took the opportunity just before that panel session to announce the $50 million for the pothole fund.
Yeah.
That's where that came from. Yeah. So he took the opportunity of an audience to announce his new policy.
Was that laughed down?
No,
it was pretty well received.
$50 million is not a lot of money.
Yeah, people were busy trying to work out how much per pothole.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I bet you they had the calculators out. Oh, hold on a minute. I've got 2,000 kilometres of roads with potholes. That's going to do about a kilometre.
But to qualify that, he actually said it was just from then to Christmas to get people home for Christmas. He actually said that.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be fixing the roads, it's just to fix them to Christmas.
Yeah, and to help with harvest. And
that was their intention.
Mind you, it took a long while between his announcement and him actually telling each council how much they had. That took about 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was very well welcomed.
So was there anything specifically watery that was discussed at the conference, or anything quite specifically related to that was useful for CTW, or that you spoke about there on our behalf, or was it just a general interest? Nothing
jumps out at me.
There's only a handful of motions regarding.
Yes.
They were talking about the raising of the dam wall, and it's a bit political because you've got water security versus environmental issues. So that's sort of been still banding around about which government is going to go which way, depending on who gets elected next year.
I think the cost also is going to be the cost benefit of something like Wayangaloo would be just prohibitive. I just don't think it's going to happen for those reasons.
Yeah, Phyllis from Forbes was quite vocal about the need to do something in terms of water security.
And the flooding, with the Neil Highway
The economic cost of the Neil Highway being closed for 6 weeks.
Raising it a couple of metres off the ground might be a good idea. And in that area, why hasn't it already been done?
As you mentioned earlier, cost.
Well, the cost of doing that on that section of Newell Highway south of Forbes, the cost of raising that is going to be significantly less than putting, raising the wall, down wall of flame.
Yeah.
Strange as it may seem.
A big levy all the way around Forbes. Anyway, yes, it was a good conference. So any more questions on that?
We'll just get a second.
Oh, we haven't got that yet. Okay, who wants to move that we received? Yes, Councillor Rawson, Councillor Cook. Those in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. 12.3, just to note, effectively note Gavin's decision to continue the practice of closing the office over Christmas, New Year.
Mm-hmm.
Would I like to move that? Mm-hmm. Yes, Councillor Best, Councillor Cook. Any discussion? No. If not, those in favour?
No.
Thank you. The next one, 12.4, application for annual leave for the general manager. So I'd like to move that.
I've got a serious problem about
it. So Councillor Ross is not moving it.
No, I'm moving it.
Councillor Cook, Councillor Best.
Someone's waking up.
However, I will say in that, and I don't know if it's jumping the gun a bit, when we talk about the performance appraisal, if we have to, what kind of leave that is, that we might need to take note of that.
Yes, it's just annual leave.
Yeah, this one used to be annual leave, and then.
I think we should then replace.
No. Yes, it says annual leave.
Yeah.
And Peter's held the reins during that period.
Yep.
Noel's away for a similar sort of period. Any questions? Those in favour? Thank you. That's carried. We move on to 12.5. The main artery pipeline augmentation project, which has got quite a lot of substance to this one. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to move the recommendation. That's the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Second is Councillor Rawson. Thank you. Gav, do you want to just fill us in on the background of this? Because this is all new, I think, to apart from the fact we knew we're going to have to do it at some stage.
Yeah.
This has all come on us pretty quickly.
It has. Yeah, three into the chair. We were invited by the by DPE Water through the Safe and Secure program to put in a proposal to mitigate risk for water security in our supply network. We're identified as being a risk category 5, which is the highest category, and that which they did under the research they did across the whole state on water utilities, and they've got $90 million put towards the Safe and Secure program for the next 2 years, 2 to 3 years, to mitigate those risks within water utilities. So it could be water security, it could be water quality issues throughout the state. So this opportunity is purely at this stage to get to a come up with a project to get to a tender ready stage. So do preliminary works leading up to going out to tender for a project to mitigate the risk. So ours being a risk to water security, when we got this opportunity to apply for funding, it's on a co-funding basis as well. Now our current subsidy level is at 50%. And as I said, for water security, I queried, and it's in my report there, I queried our eligibility, noting that our main water security that we've been advocating for well over 20 years is obviously the enlargement of Lake Rollins. And that's been been undertaken by Water Infrastructure in New South Wales, at the moment on the Blubula Water Security Project. So to make the most of this opportunity, in consultation with DPE and querying our eligibility further, they said that we said that not only have we got the water source being looked after or being investigated by the Blubula Water Security Project, we've got main arteries, obviously, through our whole network, which we're looking at replacing in, I think it's 25, 26, 27. So is that eligible for as a project to help with water security throughout our supply network? So they came back to us and said, they encourage us to put in a proposal. Obviously, there's no guarantees yet. They've still got to consider it. We're going to put a proposal in by the 30th of November. For their consideration based on the preliminary works to get to that pre-tender or that tender stage. So in consultation with DPE Water as well as our local consultant, we came up with a figure of around $300,000 to do the preliminary works to go to that tender, that tender stage for the project to replace Trunk Main C as well as Trunk Main B. So we put that forward. As I said, there's no confirmation as yet, but the thing is, it's got to be spent by
2024.
The project's got to be ready to go.
And the project being getting the request for tender out there.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, to that stage.
So we've got to do all this preliminary work beforehand to get it to go out to tender.
But no money necessarily to actually do the job. Just
no, there's no guarantees. Yeah. They haven't committed to the construction.
No, in fact, when you think about it, the $90 million covering the whole of the state.
Yeah, it's only small.
Has our consultant got any idea what this might, in today's dollars, might cost? I mean, just looking at the cost of the Orange to Carpal pipeline and the Trunk Main K and so on, you know, you'd expect we're talking 40 million or something to do all this, and more probably.
Do you know what the latest estimate is for?
No, it's more to give us a better understanding of the hydraulic modelling of our system as well, especially when we're talking about interlinking in. So because we're not ready to say we want to put a certain size pipeline to replace a certain section of Trunk Main C, we're looking at all of the different options of how things can feed in and feed out. So that's why we've changed that terminology about an artery now. Instead of our trunk main B's and C's, we talk about our main artery to feed through. But it's the add-ons that we're going to require to put better value into our sub-regional supply projects and things like that. Now, how do we actually merge it all together? Because we will be getting water in, we'll be taking water out at some and sharing it across in different areas. So that's what we could see is the benefit of investing in to get that understanding. And then when the projects come up of replacing certain sections, we can highlight that's our priority to do it, but we're ready to go. So the drawings that we're talking about, if you remember, most of our infrastructure was built in the 39s and 40s. So what we're trying to do is, this is just a highlight of what we did with our Carcor to Orange pipeline project. And it's getting it to that stage where we're taking all the information out of our old pipelines and being able to do our sections, longitudinal sections, plus our overview.
The 300,000 would get us to that.
Oh, no, no, 300 will give us to that, plus hydraulic modelling, plus other bits and pieces in there to get...
I think 300,000 would light on.
I would have thought you'd be needing more money than that.
So there's about 100 of those pages that needs to be undertaken.
But it also includes the state of environmental factors, I think. And the Aboriginal archaeology studies, studies.
You're getting more than 300,000.
Yeah, I guess.
We're not doing a full EIS. This is to get shovel ready to identify, is there any areas of concerns?
Yeah.
What we have to do if there are areas of concerns, yes, then we have to go in on those EISs and things. But, yeah.
So we used some consultant to put together that document.
It was in consultation with DPE Water, as well as we spoke with Premise.
Yeah,
with us previously.
Yeah.
The program did, and I noted in my report, that we could decline the offer at this opportunity, which obviously I haven't. Noting that, and as you said, David, and we've been through you as the chair, there's only $90 million there across the state at the moment. And so they're starting at the level 5 risk, and then if there's any local water utilities that decline, then they can go to the next
level. The way I see it is, it's in our long-term financial plan. We're going to have to do this anyway.
Yeah.
In a lead time prior to when we expect to have to do the work, which I think is over in the plan over about 3 years, in fact. So we've got to do this anyway.
Yeah.
So we get a contribution towards it, which is good. My only query is, the 300 seems a bit light on to me, and therefore our contribution, instead of being 150, could be
something be higher,
than that. We don't have to vote that now.
No.
Because
we don't know if the proposal is going to be
accepted. Yeah. Yes. And the 300,000, is that came from Premise, did it? Is their estimate of?
They contributed to assisting us with different pricing, and DPE assisted us with different pricing, and we also looked at other pricing available that came through from Forbes Parks at the later stages of those. So it was a range of different scenarios and different experts that we came to those values.
So who identified as the initial risk in that area? DPE did.
Yes. Well, we were always listed as 5 due to the lack of water to get through our droughts. That was our biggest problem. We did not have that secure yield available to us at Lake Rowlands to supply water through our lake.
That's the risk of not having the water compared to the risk of not being able to get it where we need it.
Correct. Well,
but there are two sorts of risks.
They are, but if we can bring water from another source back into our system, that helps alleviate that yielding.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of the optimal design in terms of pressure and pumps, the pipe size and that sort of stuff, depends on other things like what's going to happen with the Forbes Parks connection. How much extra water are we going to get Lake Rowlands in? Is it just the 2.2 metres? Is it nothing? Is it the 2.2 metres? Yeah. Or is it the Big Dam? And they're all factors which go into
designing
this project. Yeah. And they're unknowns.
Yeah.
And the 19,000 houses that they're building in the plan, the original plan.
I wait with bated breath to see where they're going to go.
Is when you look at the to get someone to do this job, and they've got to put in this fee estimate. It's divided into all these different components. The plan drawings, which are a few of these things here, the concept design, hydraulic analysis, environmental report, heritage, Aboriginal heritage, biodiversity, hydrology, soil, planning and regulatory, materials installation, project managers. Be interesting to see what it comes back at.
What have you got view? I'm sorry, I don't know.
This is the
that's in the bank.
Yeah, this is a separate document that Dave sent around.
I said, yeah, emailed that around with the business paper.
Yep.
Oh, that's at the bank page. Yeah.
I didn't see it. Unless it is Mr. Sutton. No, it's not that one. It's deep within my emails that I haven't yet gone right through, so it's probably where the problem lies.
It's with your email, with the business
plan. Maybe attached.
Yeah.
It's a third attachment.
Our email got sent last weekend sometime.
There's a third one. That would be it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
And when you read through that, if you're thinking that 300 might be a bit light on, when you read through that, that'll reinforce that view.
Yeah. No, well, I only know from what Orange Council have done with the mountain bike project on Mount Knobbles, which went through a similar process to all this, lots of those sorts of things. They haven't even got as far as complete ones of those, and they spent more than $500,000 so far.
And this is replacing, replacing a pipeline that's already in the ground as well, so it'll be following the same route as well. So there should be savings there, you would expect.
It isn't the contingency if there's Aboriginal or environmental claims that come up, is this?
Yeah, well, all that's included in
Yeah, that's what to say, that's enough.
Studies initially to identify any of the areas.
Yeah.
78 kilometres in total distance, was it?
Yes.
There.
That's our main artery, so that's Trunkbank B through to Trunkbank. So where it leaves the Carpool Water Treatment Plant, it feeds into Trunkbank B, and then when it hits Manjurama Township, it's Trunkbank C all the way through to Goolagong.
Yeah.
And then it feeds into Trunkbank K, which we've already augmented.
So there's really two things that will come out of this if we get the tick. One is putting out a brief for someone to do this, which will be largely based on this.
Yeah.
That goes out to someone. They put their pitch in, and it's then we know. Well, I suppose we go to more than one person for this.
Of course.
Yeah. Yep. And it's then they put in their pitch with all their pricing on all these things, and we compare them and decide. Presumably, be able to help us decide.
Yeah.
Well, they'll probably make the decision. And that's then we know whether the 300's enough or not.
Yeah. Yeah, we put this to the DPE to say this is what we estimate at the moment. And we have worked with DPE to put this together as well.
Is Premise is not the sort of organisation which would actually do this job?
They would certainly be capable of doing parts of the job, and that's why we were very careful in not taking only one person or going out to one group to talk about and help us develop this. It was around multiple areas.
Yeah, I did. They seem to have so much work on it. I wonder whether they've got the capacity or just the time, or the capacity to do it probably, but the time, because they're doing the sub-regional
groundwater strategy, public works as well.
Sorry, I've just, while you've been chatting, I've been reading through the document. Oh my goodness, this is going to take more than $300,000. I can tell you that now.
It's pretty huge, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there. But I was looking back through even some of the detail of what's required, what's being required. You know, map plant community types on post pipeline route, basically, you know, state vegetation type mapping, identify threatened ecological communities, identify threats, species records, etc. I mean, there's a lot of this is desktop stuff, but it takes time and expertise to do that, just those each individual ones. Soil mapping, hydrolines, water features, soil landscapes. I mean, yes, a lot of this information is available online. And
Does
say desktop.
It is desktop stuff. Yeah.
But there is some, like the archaeology site visit by an electric archaeologist should include an allowance for up to three days of targeted site inspection of any critical sensitive areas identified in the desktop assessment. That could be anywhere on the whole route.
A lot of ours is through farmland as well.
That doesn't preclude there being some sites of significance.
But we've already got a pipeline. It's going adjacent to the pipeline that's already existing.
That's
so you presume that they would have found it last time.
Well, the last time was when?
Presume. I did say presume.
They wouldn't have. When they put those lines in, they would not have had these requirements. Yeah. And they would have just pushed stuff aside, charged their way through and not even looked at it.
Particularly if they have a team of men with picks and shovels.
Yeah, almost. Well, no, I think they had a bit more than that. But, yeah, the requirements these days are significantly greater.
I think the benefit of it, Councillor Lawson, is because we already have a pipeline in, if it is identified as significant within that 3 metres, we can come back and replace the pipeline, not lay a pipeline alongside within that 3 metres, because it's already been disturbed.
Yeah.
That is the thinking of where we look at, let's identify something of significant risks for us, for whatever reason, but always have that ability to move back over and replace a certain section, renew a certain section of pipeline along the same path.
So this has gone to DPE. They'll have a view where the 300 is enough for this too, I suppose.
Yeah. We discussed with DPE, we discussed with subject matter experts, and we came up with that price of 300k. So it wasn't just pulled out of the air, of course.
It's asking for 300 to cover the whole lot, or are we contributing some money to it?
50% would be 150. Oh. Yeah, our subsidy, it's co-funding.
Yeah. So it's actually the 300 in total, so the only grant will be 150.
Correct.
Okay.
If DPE say, yeah, let's do it, we then got to come back and actually vote the money.
Which was said in the budget implications, the funding can be funded from our infrastructure reserves.
Yeah.
And we will put that through to council at once we get that proposal come through.
Yeah, I think with that, it depends on when the timetable is, when the work's going to commence. Obviously, we'd like the funds before the work commenced. If we needed to put that in as part of our budget planning for 23-24, we could lay out in the 23-24 budget. If we needed to vote it prior to then, we could certainly do it prior to then for a quarterly budget review or a separate vote.
One interesting aspect to it will be, we won't have to vote the money until we know actually what it's going to cost, correct?
Yes.
That's right. So if they
can. So I wouldn't want to take risk of cost overruns.
This is what I was about to say. I'm flagging right here now that I think that it's not going to be enough, and that when we go out to tender, I assume it'll be for tender. I suspect that those tendering will come up with figures well in excess of the 300,000.
Mm.
In total, I'm talking about the whole of all of this, what's required here. I suspect that it's, and then we'll only have 150,000 of subsidy. And we'll have to come up with the rest somehow. So I'm just flagging that now. I think that's what's going to happen. Mind you, it's got to happen. We've got to do it at some stage anyway. So getting 150 extra in the kitty to help us along the way, I think we've still got to do it. I mean, I'm not criticising the process or criticising doing this. I think we should do it no matter what.
The opportunity came out of that, didn't it?
And the issue too, as I said in my report, we were hit with the floods as well, so it was
it was.
Very bad timing.
Yeah, short deadlines to.
I don't want the DPE to say, we'll give you money for this because we think this is now a higher risk than your water storage risk, and we'll put the money in your artery rather than your heart.
Good way of putting it, yeah. Artery or heart.
It's probably a great help in hand in the sense that if we were planning, when we're still on schedule to actually do the replacement of this pipeline in 25-26 anyway, which is 26-27. So we're not really jumping the gun too much, are we?
No.
Because there's a lot of work to get that project to that stage.
Yeah.
And that's not too many years away, really.
It's the big question here is what happens with Lake Rollins? Obviously, if Lake Rollins come in and we're asked to make a more significant contribution than we currently have in the plan, and we've got to borrow more funding, then we have to remodel the long-term plan to look at the timing. But based on the current situation, 26-27 is not far away.
No.
I went to the long-term plan just to see where it was and whether it was exactly the same. There's one line item, trunk main C, to U, to Old River Pump House, 33 kilometres, which I assume is part of this. Mm-hmm. Trunk main B, I couldn't see anywhere in the long-term plan.
Trunk main B is outside the 10 years.
Yeah, it's out here.
Trunk main C is in there, though.
But that's only 33 kilometres. There's another 30-odd
section. There's another 28-kilometre section.
Which is not in the long-term plan.
I think it is in long-term planning. Out of years, yes.
Yeah.
So there's the priority when we put that 10-year plan was for where the pipeline was under most stress.
Yeah.
So the most stress is down the bottom end towards Canoundra and through to Goolagong. So because of the lower levels. So we've got that high pressure on that pipeline, acting on that pipeline. So we expect that it will give us more problems because of the high pressures that it's operating on compared to the other pipelines that are further up towards that are higher in elevation going back towards
the
water. I think the asset management plan actually componentized that into the two sections. Actually had the two sections.
So one thing we need to do, depending on the cost of all this, is stick to the long-term financial plan and do the bottom 33 kilometres first.
Yes.
Yeah, so we've got, it's 330,000 in 26-27, 5.4 million in 27-28, and another 5.4 in
28-29. Yeah.
I just make a point, however, through the chair, that costs of pipe, all of those things have gone up. So when this was put together, we were looking at certain costs available.
When it was put together, it was $330,000 a kilometre, basically, it was done.
Yeah.
And by then it'll be for $500,000
a kilometre. Yeah, I mean, this is today's dollars, so.
But again, the reason why we've added trunk main B is because if we can take advantage of the gravity feed that we have available, it's no good having a bigger pipe down the bottom end that we've just replaced. We might have the flow coming through from trunk main B.
Yeah, so yeah. Have a blocked artery close to the heart.
That is why we've put this trunk main B.
Thank goodness I have it.
And it's not only a renewal, it's a substantial upgrade. You're going from 200 mil, 225 to a 375.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a pretty significant increase.
No,
it's currently this size. That's that right? That doesn't seem big enough to deal with town this size, etc. So you're going to bring it up to that size and a different type of
Correct. It's similar to what we did with Trunk Main K, I guess. It's a pipeline nearby the existing one.
We're almost double the volume, wouldn't it?
It's greatly increasing.
And tie that in, Councillor Ewan, with the Torbay Reservoir. We'll be able to push water through a lot more quickly. So.
it just when you think about it, the 12-bank reservoir, the Lake Rylands augmentation, whatever form that takes, this sort of project, it's getting to the stage where you wonder how the organisation can manage all of that. I mean, financially manage it all, the capital cost.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge, yes.
Yeah, it's a challenge, that's right.
Yes.
And you can borrow.
Borrow and grants. Certainly won't get, we haven't put any budget in there for grants for our trunk lanes, but certainly we have for certainly Lake Rollins, and certainly if we go ahead with the Blaney Water Treatment Plant, we've used the, we've actually used the Safe and Secure 50-50 model to base that on.
Yeah. It's, when the network was put in, I assume, state government effectively paid for the whole thing. The Public Works, or whatever it was called, then just did it and handed it over.
Dedicated, yes.
Now we're doing it again. New storage, new reservoir, new arteries, but this time substantially funding it ourselves, not having it given to us by state government.
True.
But with this too, with the program, even though there's no guarantees yet, there could be an opportunity there for funding for the pipeline renewal as well.
Oh yeah,
obviously we've got to wear the depreciation, operational costs afterwards. Yeah. But once again,
So it's, the budget next year is going to be interesting.
It's interesting every year, Dave.
I'm looking forward.
It's interesting.
I'm looking forward to. By then we'll know, presumably, what's happening about this.
Yeah.
We might have some clearer picture on Lake Rollins, the water security project. We'll know, hopefully, that we're on track not to have to put any more money into the 12-meg reservoir. But who knows? All those things are fed into a long-term plan. The pricing's got to be updated to reflect what's happened in the last 6 or 9 months in terms of construction costs. And then we've got to relate that back to water charges.
That's going to be the setting of the water charge is going to be a significant issue to look forward to, particularly if the desire is to take some of that volatility out of the revenue stream and go higher to a higher access charge usage charge.
My position for a long while,
So that's a big call to make.
The lecture I went to on Sunday at the Hunter Valley, whoever was chatting, and can't remember what his name was, anyway, he was saying that they expect water to do what electricity's done with the charges. So they're actually expecting water to jump a lot in charges, and they're planning for that now. So I'm sort of thinking as well, going back to what you were saying before, with the government and grants and infrastructure, if you look after the war, after a crisis, which is what COVID is now, they actually funded these building works to stimulate the economy without giving it cash to people. And they're actually, if you look at what they did with the house electricity or gas, they're doing the same thing. They're not giving the cash to people as payments. They're actually starting to fund projects again. So it might be in our favour.
Now's the time to leap.
Well, it's... I think they're changing their model of we don't want to just hand cash out to people, and we want to target projects. So we might, and that's what they did after the war, to stimulate economies after crises.
Okay. So, yeah, because whenever you get a crisis, like the floods is a classic example. People think very differently.
And that guy flagged it at the Hunter Valley. He was saying that they expect water charges to be pushed up to allow for the things that they need to do.
It's looking more and more likely, I reckon, for us, substantially. One other question I've got here, Gov, is there going to be a funding deed for all of this?
There would be, So if there's any funding, obviously, that's made available to us, there'll be a funding deed.
Some standard.
Yeah, under the Safe and Secure Water Program.
And I've got a question sort of related to what I said before, or asked before about the end point of this project, as you said, was when we put out to tender. But surely we wouldn't want to do that. We get it to a point where we're about ready to do that, but not actually do it, presumably, because we won't have the money.
Money to do, yeah. Sorry.
Sorry, I think we might be on the wrong page. So this project is, we need to complete this project that we've put forward, that we've detailed, out, and have that completed by 23-24.
Yes.
What we do with it after that is then being able to use all those documents to go out and do certain sections of our main arteries. We're not doing all of our arteries, our whole of the artery together. So that what we've put in for a funding is for $300,000 to complete this project,
yes,
of getting all that document together, getting our Aboriginal side done, getting our preliminary environmental impacts done, and looking at a pipeline route on paper that we could then put out as a tender document. We're not talking about replacing any of the pipelines or anything. It's doing this project to have all that information available to then go out. But the $300,000 that we're talking about for our pre-development works, which is why we call it pre-development, needs to be completed by 23-24.
By the end of 23-24?
Yeah, 30th of June.
When are they going to say whether the A on A? Whether or not we've got funding?
They haven't indicated yet, but we're hoping early in the new year.
So we put it in by the end of November, so they've had it for a few weeks.
One would hope that it would be as soon as possible, so that you can meet that deadline, their deadline, 30th of June. Oh, no, it could be...
The program is...
30th of June 24.
18 months.
That's not long.
Yeah. So the program is only funded for 22, 23, 24.
Mm.
So that's
a
tight deadline.
Whoever tenders for it is going to know that they can complete that deadline.
So once we know exactly what it is we want to build the whole way down, then we can do it in bit by bit.
Yeah,
consistent with the overall...
long-term financial plan.
Yes, and the overall design for the full length. You can just do it in bits.
Yeah.
And that was, in fact, what was going to happen with the Orange Pipeline originally. Remember, there were three stages, I think, they were doing Orange to Spring Hill or something, Spring Hill down to Plum Street, and then Plum Street down to Carcor. I think that was the original. And then whoever they were then, said, let's do the first two, not the third. And then at the end, they said, oh, let's do the whole thing.
The whole lot at once.
All right, that's a good discussion. Any more questions? Those in favour?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Carried. Another substantive matter, 12.6, the package in response to the Yugara flooding event. So I'd like to move the recommendation. Councillor Ewan, seconded.
I do have something to say about that, though, and I'm sorry.
Councillor Best?
Yeah.
Let's get a second first.
It, or are we are they moving the recommendation?
No, we're just getting a second. Okay. I've got it moved, seconded.
Yes,
Councillor Best? Okay, now we're discussing it.
Sorry, I thought you were moving the motion.
Councillor Cook, you wanted to go first.
Just a few things. It's just Yugara, and as you know,
This is where I was going.
Not just Yugara. So maybe, is this one about the water credits, or is this just about the donation? Sorry.
Good thing.
Is the GIVIT. I have all, respect to give a donation. I just know from GIVIT is actually getting Rotary and Parks to do all the donations and to process that with the resilience, and they're not having much luck with GIVIT. So I don't know if it's a bit like the Bushfire Fund where they had all this money sitting there and it wasn't coming to the people that needed it. So I'm just a little bit concerned about. And I don't know GIVIT myself, and I did actually meet the minister who set it up on Monday, but we didn't quite get to discuss that. So that's all I just would say is I don't know.
So two queries. One is not just Yugara.
Yep.
Why are we looking just at Yugara?
Yep.
And the second thing is, in terms of the cash donation, is it appropriate that it goes through GIVIT?
That's right. Thank you.
We'll get some responses. Yep. Any other issues? Andrew?
Oh, look, I was going to say the same thing. Why specifically Yugara? It's because there were other areas within our gambit, within our area, that were impacted by the flooding, specifically Kidal, which is where we were. But there were other locations where there's going to be hardship.
Yep.
Kidal wasn't affected in the same way as Yugara in terms of water. So they actually still had their water supply. Manildra similarly was impacted, and Pulley was out there working away diligently to get their water on. So that there were other locations where people were impacted, but not as much as Yugara. But there's still going to be financial hardship as a result of the floods in those locations.
Yes.
And so therefore, my view is that if we're going to do this, and I think it's a good idea, that we should expand that for those other areas where there was financial hardship as a result of the floods. So it's not just Yugara.
Yeah.
I think the cash donation, it's sort of token. It's a token amount, $5,000. I mean, we are an institution which, okay, we don't have a lot of money in our back pocket to hand out to things. And I understand the rationale for giving a donation. It's a good public relations exercise, apart from anything else. But $5,000 is actually not a lot of money. I'm not sure where that's going to go to. Who is it going to help?
Yep.
We probably would be better off providing the help in these other ways, the other ways that you've described here. Support for people when they come to pay the bills, that sort of thing, I think would have a far greater impact than a one-off token, $5,000. I just think that it's not, I don't think it achieves what you would hope it would achieve. It's my view.
It's great to do it, but
I just think that it's taken thing here, but it's nice in the sense that, the organisation staff have said, look, we're happy to forego our Christmas party and give that money. So taken as you might say it or not, I think from a staff point of view, I think it's a nice gratitude thing there. They're happy to do through the organisation in preference to sit around the table and enjoy Christmas lunch with a beer or two instead. So.
Mm.
As tokens as it may seem, I think the intent is very important indeed.
Yeah. I agree with you in that. Yeah, that it is a good gesture. It's just, I suppose, the best use value for money, or making it go as far as we can. That's all I was questioning of.
Yeah. But on the tokens, it doesn't work out to be $40,000.
In total, we're basically donating
$40,000 out of our operating revenue.
It's freely assuming. It's certainly not token when you consider the total package of measures
involved
here. It's quite significant.
Oh, I think that is.
Yes. Probably the most significant in the council.
I was thinking the donation of $5,000 comes across as is only that, not the rest. Absolutely. No, I think
what we're saying is do the customer hardship. And maybe not make the $5,000 to give it. I think that's what I'm sort of saying. Maybe keep that in our pocket for a little while and give people with their water bills the credits.
Can we deal with the points that have been raised one by one, and we'll see whether we want some sort of amend the recommendation? First of all, the point about not just Yugara and whether some recognition may be different because. Customers in Kudal and Manildra weren't as badly affected, no boil water alert, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
How would we do that? Is there a...
Yeah, well, that's the thing. We don't know which customers in Kudal or Manildra were affected. And I know in Yugara too, there were some homes that fortunately weren't affected. Just go back a step, and I've already advised council of this anyway, and when Noel and I went out there and Councillor Royce, and I spoke to you on the phone, and also Councillor Cook, but just the devastation in Yagara was just horrific.
Mm.
It was horrendous.
Mm.
And I take Councillor Ewan's point, when I first raised it, and I raised it with you, Mr. Chairman, about the suggestion of the foregoing the Christmas party. The staff were extremely supportive of that and receptive. Not only the the operational staff that were on the ground and saw the devastation firsthand, but also the staff inside the office that were taking the calls from the people who had been affected. And we focused on Yagara because, as you said, they were the mostly ill. It was shocking. It was just horrific. And then from an administrative point of view, how do you then be fair and reasonable to other areas like Manildra, like Cadell, Canoundra? I know there's a couple of people here in Canoundra. But we're thinking, do we wait to hear back from those residents who were affected? Because we don't know who, as I said, it wasn't clear who was. It was more in Yagara where we know that we've got 320 connections. The majority of those connections were affected, or those residents were affected, and that's how we've worked through that. The other thing we did think of, but we haven't put it forward, is a delegation to me or any other affected areas on a case-by-case basis to, if we do get contacted, then we can offer some support there. But it's just difficult because it's, how do you know without going, you don't want to go and inspect or to verify to say, I know you are eligible for this funding, and then how do you administer that as well?
Yeah, it's a difficult thing without a hardship policy. Mm. That's the only way you can cover on that is have a policy to cover it. No other way.
Well, I certainly support what you've suggested here. You know, I absolutely support it, and I'm so glad to note that those letters didn't go out to Yagara residents.
That was quite lucky. The timing was unfortunate.
Yes.
With when the incident occurred, but we did get a call from representative of the Progress Association over there, and he said that they're just in the post office there, what do you want to do? And Gavin was actually out of the office at the time, and I thought, I'll check with him tomorrow just sit them aside and we'll get back to you.
A breach of the Postal Act to interfere with the delivery.
Well, technically it would, but that was
a they're sitting back at the office now.
That was a good call.
People that actually got there by email, which I guess a
correct. Email there was about
went out to
there was about 30 of them. There. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
but and some of those people have paid as well.
So
I can just put those points through. There was a lot of discussion around how could we assist, because we obviously understood the devastation. And that was reported from day one when we had two staff members out there taking photos, reporting back, and you could feel within them just that, how bad it was. So there was an emotional content into that, of course. But the second point is CTW has an obligation. We take on board of providing quality drinking water. Now, in these circumstances, and I think this is the first time, we have had to put out a boil water alert, so we take that to heart as well. So there's two components of why we stood with Yagara. One was the devastation, and I'm not downplaying any of the devastation elsewhere either, but we can see the total effect of what has happened to one township, not parts of other townships. And we were in the other parts of the township, such as Manildra, such as Cudell, our guys were straight on there and they fixed the problem. We can do temporary repairs. So the impulse onto our consumers weren't as great as what we had at Yagara, and we currently still have a boil water alert. So again, taking that on board, how can we provide a quality drinking water when it's got a boil water alert associated to it? So that were the factors that we actually took on board when we were trying to come up with a plan to put forward to council, noting those two effects, boil water alert and the devastation of the flood. And we didn't take them in isolation. We put that together as the package to try and assist with the people that were immediately affected by that, the whole of the town going through.
Okay, thanks, Noel. Just bringing that to a head, there's two issues. One, extension beyond Yugara, and the second one is the 5,000 cash donation. The extension beyond Yugara has been explained by staff because of the difference between the devastation in Yugara compared to the devastation, the widespread devastation. And the boiler water electric didn't apply to the other towns we served, which were affected. And secondly, in relation to the 5,000 cash donation, I think one response to that is it's the best means of giving effect to what the staff wanted to do, or at least in part, of forego the money we would otherwise spend on the Christmas party and make a contribution to the people of Yugara. I mean, it's not. I think the 3,000 was the Christmas party, so we're topping that up. But so the staff are contributing, in a sense, if you like, 3,000. Council's contributing too. So they're the sort of issues. Now, having regard to all that, would someone like to move any amendment to the recommendation?
Well, about the cash donation, I was going to suggest we'll continue to do it. Now, I did read this earlier on today, but I had forgotten the fact that some of that money was specifically from staff, effectively. And so, therefore, it's not necessarily an insignificant donation. It has more meaning to it than just coming from an institution like ours.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an institutional donation. It's actually a staff donation, in a sense.
Yeah.
In which case... I think we stay with it, but make it clearer in the recommendation here that that's where the source of the money is coming from, that it's actually donated. It comes from a particular a change in particular in a practice, which is in this case Christmas party. And we have that as an amendment.
All right. Well, can I suggest therefore that in item 3, the council provided 5,000 cash donation to the Give It You Go to Flood Appeal. We add after that, sourced largely by the staff foregoing the annual Christmas party.
Yep. Or to that effect.
Mm. Yeah. Yep.
Or the council divert funds from staff Christmas party to towards cash donation to the Gower Flood Appeal.
It doesn't mention an amount though.
Well, we mentioned the amount.
Just have a question to the general manager. How would you feel? You think the staff would be against in just increasing our funded vote from 35,000 to actually 40,400, whatever it is, and using that money to increase the subsidy, because that will go out to every resident. Every resident will get an increase. Right. And so instead, if you have issues with Give It Foundation or whatever, giving that out equally and fairly within the whole community by just increasing that amount, that will go to every single resident.
No, I don't think I'd have an issue with that. So in lieu of
just in an equitable, way of putting it.
Cash donation, but putting that towards, say, ringing out to 40,000, that's going to spread across all consumers.
So, I mean, it only, yeah.
Because if you're going to add to that, like with the Give It, and again, I'm not saying we shouldn't have donations, but from what I'm hearing on the ground, people in these places like want to have people to come and stay with them to help them fix it up.
Hmm.
They're getting cash cards. But they need an accommodation bill paid for these people to come and help them. Or they need the U-Haul truck to take away their stuff, and they can't use those. They're giving them gift cards, which they can't use to pay the accommodation for their mum to stay in the hotel for another week. And that's where this, you know, even though it's a great idea, it's just on the ground, it's not coming through to the people who need it in the way they need it.
Mm.
And that's what I say. I'm not just saying we shouldn't be donating or anything like that. I'm just saying, from what I'm hearing on the ground, it's not getting to people in what they need right at this point.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I asked the question then of Councillor Cook in terms of taking that on board as to what is the thought as to what is the best way.
Yep. Well,
to facilitate addressing those specific issues.
Well, in relation to Parks Rotary have been asked by Resilience New South Wales to coordinate. So they're getting Rotarians coming from everywhere giving money, and they're actually coordinating that. I could find out for you, but I just haven't got that answer today. But they're literally on the ground trying to sort these sort of things for people. So, I mean, you know.
So, my understanding is correct. Is the donation going to the Rotary Club of Australia and then being passed to Parks Rotary for distribution?
Maybe that's a, you know, and I say, I don't have anything against Givett. I just have been hearing that it's not helping at the moment. It's all tied up in bureaucracy, and they're trying to help people right now. You know, maybe it's, you know, giving accommodation vouchers. You know what I mean? Like maybe spending that $5,000 on bookings.com and saying, I don't know. And as I said, I probably should have done some more research, but that's just what I'm hearing on the ground is the money's not getting through to them.
Okay, I'll try and bring this to a head. So the feeling I'm getting is that there's an unease about a cash donation to give it.
Yep.
There's no unease about the fact that there's, on top of what you're suggesting about the 30 kilolitre allowance, there's no problem with expanding that to cover an extra five, which is probably another 35 kilolitres.
35 kilolitres.
Whatever, that's round about that, roughly.
Yeah.
Amending number two to provide 35, together with an acknowledgement that's funded in part by the staff foregoing the Christmas party.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that would be well received by the staff.
Yeah.
And the community, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And it takes it up to, I think it's $125 per connection. So we're basically giving every person connected $125.
Yeah, how it would be facilitated.
I think we need to get to kilolitres. Yeah.
We need to get to kilolitres to facilitate this through the software.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it would be a kilolitre figure, and we'd extrapolate from that.
And one of the consequences of doing it this way, of course, is our water sales will still be up.
Okay.
And the allowance will be effectively writing off part of the water sales.
Effectively, it'll be an allowance for water that which they didn't have to, the residents didn't have to pay for, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the accounting treatment.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I'll just throw another curveball in. Could we keep it at the 30 that it is, and maybe say that extra bit of money goes towards other residents who might apply for a hardship allowance?
On an adult basis.
If you've already got all of that, all those figures done, and then you've got that $5,000 sitting aside for other people who might come to you and say, I need hardship.
I'd be against that pretty well.
Yeah, it's getting a bit complicated.
It puts the general manager in a position that I don't really think he should be putting in.
As I said, you don't know until you go. You're not going to go out and speak to someone who's up and say that I was affected by flooding in whatever area.
This is where
it's just going to be.
No. Without the backing of a council policy, I don't think
that's appropriate at all. So, I'm going to suggest I ask someone to move this amendment in a minute and second it. And the amendment is that paragraph 2 be amended by changing 30 kilolitres to 35 kilolitres.
And this is for all Yugawa residents, regardless of whether or not they've been flooded?
That's
and the prime reason for that is that they were all affected by the boiled water.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. 35, and we add after that, funded in part by the staff foregoing the annual Christmas party. And the second part of the amendment is to delete paragraph 3.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay, we'll see what that is. Now, who would like to move the amendment?
I'm happy to do so.
Councillor Rawson, seconded. Councillor Best.
And there comes the next, what's number 4?
So let me put the amendment. Those in favour?
Aye.
Carried. That becomes the resolution. Now, so the resolution now is One, two as amended, four and five, which becomes three and four. Any further discussion?
I'm just looking at number four. Council place a moratorium on charging interest. Yes, I certainly agree with that. Yeah, but the number five, can that be spread beyond a Yugara?
We can do that anyway with payment arrangements, as in giving residents more time. We do that as a matter of practice, giving residents more time if they need to pay their to pay their accounts. Yeah. And we also have one actually here in Canoundra, did with Peter. They were getting evacuated by a boat. And they could hear their water system going, their hot water system going. And so, so they contacted us and we've told them to put in a concealed leaks or a leaks request, concession request, and under that I'll consider that, even though it is a little bit out of our policy, but I think under the circumstances,
well, it would have been concealed.
Be able to control. You couldn't detect the leak.
It's totally out of their control, obviously. But I would consider.
Happy with that?
So can I just, before we vote on it, do you have to ask the staff if they're happy with that before we vote on it?
I think the staff would be well received. As I said, not only the outdoor, the operational staff, but also the indoor staff taking the calls of people that had lost everything, their whole house. We had a few calls saying we want the water disconnected because we haven't got a house here now whatsoever. I think it would be.
I think the important thing is now the recognition of what the staff have foregone is included in the. Resolution.
Just as long as we're still recognising staff have given up something, and it's not just they think,
Through you, Mr. Chairman, too, when we're talking about this volume of water figure that we're going to give, and there was a lot of discussion around flow rates and other factors in terms of how much time that would give you to use using extra water for cleanup and those type of things. We were having discussions with Noel and we were crunching some of the figures and whatever, and Noel said, you know, that doesn't quite look right, it doesn't sound right. And I thought about it and I thought, no, I think he's right there. That's just probably too much, and then we come up and so it was something that was given a lot of consideration in terms of how we went about it. We do have restrictions in the software. We can't just give someone a put a donation, word donation, whatever there. We've got to actually credit the bill, which will come off the arrears first, so it won't actually show on it. We wanted to show it on the account, so we get the support out there as quickly as possible. The community knows we've done this. They can get on with their cleanup and worry about other things. They don't have to worry so much about their water supply.
So you'll be able to identify this on the bill as well as being.
No, we can't.
You can't.
Not if the person, not if they have an arrears. No, it'll come off the arrears. So if someone had an account for $150 that just recently, and that account wasn't distributed in the post because we withdrew those accounts. We just got them back from the post office. It will come off the arrears, so it will show as a reduced arrears. So what our intention is, we physically have the previous accounts that were to be posted in the office. We were going to attach the previous account, put a leaflet in, put a leaflet in the middle,
explain it,
and then put the new account in so they could see exactly what's going on with the account. That's how we're proposing to get over that problem of not being able to
identify it specifically in the bill. Yeah.
Can I just ask a technical question, or maybe a blonde question? But if they're not using water at the moment, that would sort of imply that there's no house to use the water in.
It'd be a credit on their account.
So through the chair, that the issue that arose when the house was washed away was the meter was still there and water was flowing through that meter because there was nothing stopping the water.
Yep.
So the value of the meter turning around would show a high usage of water. And the reason being is because the house has been washed away.
Yeah, but I was just like, you think there would be some sort of spike or something for you to be able to see and go, oh, you know, this is not normal usage. It's either stopped or gone right over the.
We don't look at it as an impact day by day or week by week. We look at it from 3 months to 3 months. It's very hard to see.
Because I'm just saying that because in my area, everyone's water pumps got washed away. So that's $100,000 per farm to get us back to water.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of assets that are around.
My water line got washed away as well, one thing about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've had an amendment. The amendment's been passed. The amendment's become the resolution. There's no further discussion.
The only thing I was going to mention was it was mentioned earlier about it was only about the Yagara. Should we amend 5 or Gavin? Did suggest that there are other ways that we can compensate these people outside the Yagara area that have been flooded. So we'll just leave it at that possibly.
We can, or unless you want to put in there
the flood area. I just wondered whether.
Yeah, be delegated to enter any further payment arrangements for
flood affected
consumers.
Yeah,
flood affected consumers, if considered necessary, and then. You just use your discretion as you would do now with those.
All right. We won't go through the formality of regarding that as another amendment. Let's take it that those who amended the original one are happy with that further amendment.
No, you've got a problem.
This is going to have to be reviewed through the quarterly budget statement, isn't it? So like that can be pretty open ended, isn't it? That's going to be.
Yeah, but this won't be that number 5. There will be more. Time to pay the account rather than giving them.
Well, that's what I mean. Like that's we do that anyway. You're obviously going to give that anyway. That's why I don't know whether we should.
Well, I think that was the response to why is it just you go? I mean, do it for the others anyway.
Just put it as a resolution, though. At least it's
documented.
But as long as there's a separation between doing it for the resolution and offering them the same discount on their.
No, it talks about payment arrangements.
Yeah, okay, if you're happy, that's right. I'm just trying to quantify
through the chair. Can I just? There's going to be an awful lot of people from Manildra, from Udell, from any other, from Canandra, that will govern as, or Peter, stepping into the role of general manager, is going to have to deal with.
Yep.
And that's going to be a huge impost.
That's
the only reason why, when we looked at this package, I go back to the basis of how we looked at that package, was yes, we understand that there are other areas of concerns. However, we got onto them very quickly. They were done with inside of a day to get water restored back. And I think once the public gets the perception that they can ring up the office and get these things delayed in their payment, that's an awful big impost, especially over Christmas period, and that for our general managers stepping in the role. So I'd just like council be aware of that impost because I just can see that coming through. That's
going to be a mess. It's going to happen anyway, regardless of whatever decision we make.
I was going to say they do that anyway. But maybe I was thinking. Sorry, for one, be good to get this. Finished. But 5 having there enter into any further deferred payment arrangements. We'll be putting deferred.
Okay, well, those who move the amendment happy with that modification to the amendment? I'll take it.
Just read 5 again then, please. The general manager says it's not Yagara, then
it's the general manager be delegated to enter into further
deferred
payment arrangements for flood affected consumers if considered necessary.
That sounds good to me. You've got that look on your face.
Oh, that's just trying to get my head around it, that's all.
Which is really which is going to happen anyway.
It's not further deferred, it's just deferred.
It's just deferred.
Yeah, it's
and like
going to happen.
And I think there's 20 houses left away as well.
All right.
So, you know.
Any further comments? You understand what we're voting on? All those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you for that very constructive.
And I'm sorry for the
useful discussion.
No, I apologise. That was looking at really got me too.
Now. We move on to 12.7, the resolutions update. Someone like to move that? Councillor Yates Cook, seconded Councillor Ewan. Thank you. Any questions, Gavin, in relation to progress on those outstanding resolutions?
No.
Just on the first one, the perennial, you know, the orange agreement.
Somebody's got to ask the question.
Yeah, it says, and I was ensured that the water sharing agreement has been a standard agenda item on each monthly meeting. What happens when you get to that item on the agenda?
We present it, and the reply is it's ongoing. We are aware. Orange, you know, the person that's looking after it, is aware of it, and it's presented as being aware.
There is,
in a similar fashion, of we've all had that long time in between things, and there's other priorities on. But it is becoming to, it has been raised many times outside of the meeting as well. So there is pressure being applied, and I know Gavin has put pressure on
my counterpart in Orange as well.
But all of what this is saying is we do raise it every month. That person is the same person that says, yes, I'll get to it. We understand where you're coming from now. But it's just, you know, having that drive. So there's two avenues that we are addressing to try and bring this to a head, but we are stuck. So.
But, I mean, the impression I get from that is that Orange are just not particularly interested in progressing.
It's not
on high on their priorities.
In the way that we have presented it, was a different way than they first accepted that we were going to operate the pipeline. Mm. Now, it's a matter of changing people's opinions of how we can run this. So, and we are gaining that support. So it's not just stop, it is gaining that support.
Mm. Well, I'll go back to what I've said. Particularly every time we talk about this, I'd be happy for that to re-abandon any idea of trying to negotiate this agreement as a one-off. And the basis on which water is transferred between us and Orange and us and Combined Molong and Molong and Orange and, you know, all this is going to come out of that sub-regional water. That's one of the things they're looking at, the base on which water will be shared around. Ideally, it'll be the same. The basis on which we send water to Molong, or Orange sends water to Molong, or Molong sends water to us, or us to Orange, will all be the same. Pricing will be the same, the trigger points will be the same, the flushing routine will be the same, rules and all that sort of stuff. I say it again, my view is we just say, listen, let's not worry about that now. Let's deal with this as an output from the sub-regional water strategy. But I raise that, and that doesn't seem to be what you want to do.
Excuse me.
And it's...
So, yeah, through the chair. And the reason why I'm against that is we are susceptible at all times of having issues with our water treatment plants or having an emergency, and that COVID, I think, was one of the big issues that we had in manpower. We have lost what our water quality manager, so I'm down to two operators now. Having that pipeline available to bring water from Orange into Central Tablelands is a saviour for us. So I don't want to take the pressure off in getting that agreement there so we can enact it straight away. So at the moment that we can get that agreement through, there is pressure on from DPE as well. They are also putting pressure on Orange to try and get this agreement through and get the pipeline flushed out, allow us to be able to use that water to go backwards and forwards. So we do not have a dead water issue, and within 24 hours we can enact on it. So that is one of the reasons why I'm saying our drive is to get that through as quickly as possible. We do raise it, we push it, but to take the throttle off, I would be against that at the moment. It is such a valuable asset for us, that pipeline, to give us that, to overcome vulnerabilities of CTW.
So the line has not been flushed?
There's 7 kilometres or 8 kilometres between Spring Hill and the crossover or at the boundary of near Millthorpe.
Why is the flushing of that not? Why is it dependent on this agreement? It shouldn't be dependent. That should just be an operational.
Who's going to pay for it? Yeah. So we, through the chair, sorry. when we commissioned the pipeline, we moved water between both sides so we could prove that the pipeline can achieve the flow rates, et cetera, et cetera. Then it was boxed up. So we use sections of that pipeline from Cardinal
up to
through to Millthorpe,
yeah.
And that's where it stops. Orange uses the pipeline to go all the way through to Spring Hill, and that's where it stops. So between Spring Hill to Millthorpe is about 7 kilometres, a kilometre from us to get to our changeover point, and about 6 kilometres from Spring Hill to get to the changeover point. So in that size pipe, we need to flush that because it's not being turned over. It's a valve each end that is just shut off.
That's in this day and age, at the moment, while we've got so much water floating around, I just thought it would be a no-brainer just to quickly say, you know, have a quick agreement between you and Orange and go, look, let's just flush this now. We'll pay for it half-half or not pay for it at all.
That through the chair, that proposal has been put forward to Orange, and it had the backing of DPE to support that, to move that water through and flush. However, it was considered if we can move this agreement forward, when we do flush it, we don't have to reflush it at another time, maybe a month down the track or so. So this agreement, we're hoping we can get that through. And I think the last proposal was end of January. I think Orange said that they would have this back to us by the end of January.
It seems strange that it's a flushing thing, which is a very much an operational thing, right? Why is it dependent upon this agreement, which is a broader agreement about who pays for, you know, when the water's got to go that way or that way?
It's not about the flushing. Both are agreeing that has to be flushed, and it has to be then decontaminated, but you would need chlorine in there to ensure that water that's been flushed and it is available.
How frequently does it need flushing?
That's the unknown. We don't know.
And that's where we like to use it on a regular basis, transfer water to and from. So you don't have to flush it. And then the quality would remain.
Transfer so much water in our way and then transfer the same amount of water back way and so keep it fresh.
We could start it every 2 weeks. Yeah. We may.
That's the plan.
2 weeks on a weekend, we would move water one way. On a fortnight later, on a weekend, we can move water back the other way.
Right.
It may then go out to 3 weeks that the water quality is still sufficient to be able to be transferred.
If it's the same amount of water each time, surely there's no cost.
It would be Orange.
Well, zero cost. For you, Mr. Chairman, this is the point as to what Orange would charge us to transfer water to us, and what we would charge Orange for transferring water. That's where the agreement comes
in. That's in the agreement. That is the costing.
That's
the operational.
So you've got a net zero.
Yeah. A net zero. Yeah. It just seems such a no-brainer sort of thing to do. It's just why are they dragging why they're dragging the chain.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. But if it came to
$22 million pipeline, then we can't do an agreement.
We'd have to do it. You'd do it and say, let's do it. Okay, we'll open the valve, you know, in 2 hours' time.
You would do it.
You do it.
Except it's been sitting there for that long. How do we know that we're going to be able to reverse the pumps to get water from Plum Street back up to Carcoy?
We've got to get it done.
It hasn't been tested. That site hasn't been tested. It wasn't part of the commissioning process.
Oh, really?
We can go past, but we can't pump from Blaney up to there. So, and again, it's sat there for, 18 months or so. You know, how do we know that it's going to work? This is
where can't we pump water out from Plum Street up to Carcoy ourselves without talking to Orange about it?
We can, but we can. The pipeline is designed to pump water from Orange directly through to Carcoy, and it'll just branch off at Plum Street. But we've made changes so as we can pump from Plum Street up to Carcoy, so we can bring water through our water treatment plant at Blaney and keep it self-contained. But there's certain operational constraints that need to are part of the logic of transferring water.
Mm.
Now, within 18 months, I'm going to turn that on. It would be nicer to know that it's going to operate and not have that pressure on you that it's an emergency where you're trying to get that water in because it is an emergency.
And it would be really even more crazy to have to do all that commissioning work at a time when we're in deep drought and in an emergency. Mm. When at the time to do all of that is right now when we've got all this water in the landscape.
Correct. Yes. And Wayne Torrens, if you propose to them, let's do a little trial flushing and outline how you'd like to do it and get their agreement as a sort of quite outside this agreement.
Yeah.
Just do a flushing mutual benefit. Let's just check how it's going.
That was proposed.
It just went. Quite apart from the agreement.
That's what was proposed.
I'm just wondering whether or not this is something that we should lean on some people, our colleagues in OCC.
So what does the GM of Orange think about this?
Well, I turned the recording
off. Oh, you've turned it off already.
No, there's pressure on us. 2 years ago when we first started for us to
agree
or to move on with the agreement, which we did. And now, the roles have been reversed where there's been pressure now put on them. So I think that the Orange CEO is keen for it to move on, but I just think at the moment it's obviously stored at a lower level.
You took so long in the early stages to get back to us. We're going to match that by taking this
I think in the early stages, maybe, but not so much now.
Is there any benefit in, no one wants to upset anybody, but at the same take, is there any benefit in council writing a letter to DP and asking DP to progress it?
No,
I know you said they're already doing that, but in a more official capacity, you say we asked them to progress them out.
May I ask that we wait till the next council meeting because there was an agreement that we would have this by the end of the
Okay, you say wait at that point and we move on.
Hold back until then.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
That would be a great leave.
Yep, I understand.
If I can just say to General Manager, I think there's a word upcoming in the first bit that you might need to remove under decision.
Which one, sorry? The
number one. It might be just an extra word there.
No, I see. Upcoming drought management. Oh, in March 2020.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes.
We've
moved on a little since then.
Yeah, but that's the resolution.
Yeah, that's the resolution.
Resolution.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's the resolution.
Okay. So you can't change it.
Well, it may well be, if I can foreshadow this, that when we get our next meeting, which will be February, depending on what's happened by the end of January, it may well be we will put a resolution to council. Progressing this in whatever's appropriate at the time.
Yeah.
So it's getting to that stage. Well, we get this report every month.
Yeah.
Nothing's happened. That block of words there, I'm sure that's been the same for a year. The date might have changed a bit. So if nothing's happened by next meeting, maybe we do need to pass a resolution.
That's
cool.
Yeah.
All right. That was our first item. Sorry. I'm not sorry. I erase it. Any other comments on that's okay. Those in favour, Gary, thank you. Financial matters, the investment report. I'd like to move. We note Peter's recommendation. Yes, Councillor Best seconded. Councillor Cook, thank you. Peter, thanks for your report. Anything you'd like to emphasise there?
Please. Mr. Chairman, it's pretty much steady as she goes. The Reserve Bank is still raising the cash rate in response to the concerns about inflation. Yep. There is some conjecture by economists as to where that raising is going to end. Some believe it's getting quite close now, and others are saying, well, we could be looking at a 4% cash rate by the middle of next
What does Alan Kohler think?
I haven't heard of Mr. Kohler's comments. I think he's been on leave, actually. But I do listen to Mr. Kohler from time to time.
The Fed has put it up a 0.5% only overnight. And they're foreshadowing more for next year.
Yes, and that's, Councillor Lawson, that's an important factor, because what's happening is you're getting the differential between the various interest rates and the capital flows to the highest rate. So that puts a lot of pressure on our dollar. So, and if the dollar drops, then our cost of imports rise. Our exports become more attractive, but our imports rise, so that feeds the inflation figure. So the Reserve Bank, the chairman there, he's obviously got issues about some of the predictions he made, but he's got a very difficult job. The Reserve Bank and the board have got a very difficult job at the moment to try and navigate these waters. And they don't want to put the economy into a recession. And so it's not a job that I think it would be.
Well, and they're dealing with the federal government review on the whole operation of the bank as well.
Correct. But we've managed to get some pretty good investments there. We're starting to get over 4% for a 12-month term on a consistent basis. We still have a few older investments there that are yet to mature, but our funds under investment are reasonably healthy at the moment, and we've been able to get some pretty good rates. The reservoir at Carcool treatment plant, that's going to start, I think, early next year. So we'll just be mindful of that from a cash flow point of view. I know it's the majority of it is grant funded. There is some of our own funding, 810,000 of our own funding. But we rely on invoicing Orange to get that cash flow with the grant. So we just have to make sure we've got sufficient capital there to actually fund those progress payments as they come through. But no, I think things are looking pretty healthy. I've actually looked at the, later on when we look at the QBRS, I put an extra 20,000 in their interest income, and we might achieve a little bit better than that over the year if the rates hold up, which they appear that they're going to do. There's a few institutions out there that are looking for funds at the moment.
That's good. Any questions for Peter? I put that, those in favour. Thank you. Carried. 12.9, the annual financial statements. Well, we've dealt with the bulk of this in the presentation from Leanne Smith we had earlier. Someone like to move that we receive the financial statements and the auditor's report. Councillor Cook and Councillor Ewan, thank you. I think we've probably asked all our questions on this, so we'll move on. Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. Carried. 12.10, the QBRS end of September. Someone like to move that one?
Do that again.
Councillor Cook. Councillor Rawson. Peter, do you want to draw our attention to some major variations
through
there?
You, Mr. Chair, and the variations we have, we don't have a huge amount. In our income and expenditure line, we've got 15,000 additional other revenue, which is basically at the moment we're undergoing, we're using a merchant agent to collect some of those more long-term debts, and the auditor actually touched on the fact that our debt, outstanding debts are coming down marginally, but we've put a big effort, and certainly have to pay credit to the finance officer and the revenue team for getting onto that, and that's sort of ongoing. So we've incurred some costs in that regard. We fully recover those costs against the accounts, so there's an in and an out. The other things we've got there is we voted 18,000 for the governance officer to go full time. That was a previous report to council, previous meeting. 20,000 of the costs from employee costs went into materials and contracts, because that was just labour hire position. So that's how we come up with the net 2,000 there. $20,000 of additional interest and investment revenue. And the big one, of course, is the depreciation and amortisation. This is always a difficult one. We touched on that with the report of the auditors. The asset revaluation was significantly higher than I expected when I did the budget. So I allowed about $100,000 additional depreciation in the original estimate, but it's certainly not going to be enough, so I've put another 100 in there to see. Once we get the asset officer on board and we can do a bit more detailed modelling, we can sort of try and get a better understanding of that figure, but it's a difficult one to sort of estimate, and it's a very difficult thing to control, particularly when you're renewing your network and you're expanding your network. It's just the cost that you have to bear in mind when you're setting your fees and charges.
Yeah.
But overall, we're still budgeting on a small operating result before capital. So hopefully our sales will pick up in the next two quarters. We're down currently, probably $500,000 to $600,000 on the first two reads on where we could be. I'll certainly look at that again when I do probably the March review to see how we go with the January reads particularly, and see how we're shaping up there. But it may be we need to cut the estimate there of water sales again, which will probably send us into a small deficit once again there. But we'll see how we go, see how, what happens with the weather prediction, and see if we can get some hot weather over summer, which we haven't seen as yet.
We're halfway into the first month of summer and it's freezing.
In relation to the capital budget, probably the big ticket item is the new metering that we're required to put in for our unregulated water supplies at Goolagong, Water Lake, Rollins and Quandiella. Mm-hmm. That's a Water New South Wales requirement, which Noel can explain that requirement. It's been something that's been on the agenda for 18 months or so now, hasn't it? So we're just at the stage now, we're putting the meters in. We've got 90,000 there.
What does that meter?
Okay, so non-urban water, so in other words, any water that we're pulling out to provide urban water, we've got to pay for. So that's water coming from Lake Rollins, we're paying for that. Water coming from Goolagong Bores, we're paying for that. So what the Water New South Wales is doing is trying to provide better metering so they get access on a day-by-day basis of how much water is being removed in there. So it's a telemetry system that they're upgrading. Mm. So we've got to provide metering that will provide that data to them on that day-by-day basis.
We pay for that water. We have it. We've got to know exactly how much we take.
Yeah, correct. So where we...
It could reduce what we pay them.
No.
So not only have we got to put the metering in, but we have to pay for a bit more raw water.
Mm-hmm. The metering for Lake Roland was always taken from what entered into Carcor Water Treatment Plant and Blaney Water Treatment Plant. The metering has to be as close as possible to the source of water.
So we've been at risk of transmission losses.
Yes, hence why we now have to come back and put new metering in of a certain type at the source of the water.
And this would have all stemmed from when they had that review done back 3 or 4 years ago. It was water not being metered, but taken.
Closing loopholes.
I was going to say, we're paying a lot of money for raw water that is full of manganese and. You know, I think we should get a discount for all of this, you know, this poor water that we're having to deal with and, you know, having to process.
That's
right. Yeah, good luck.
Through the chairman, that Health, New South Wales Health does assist us with any issues that we have.
Oh, okay.
And they are the first ones on site to help us with our pilot clinics and how we can operate them. They do certainly assist understanding that there are large variations due to different weather.
They don't give us a discount though, do they?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman, there's only one other item that will bring to the notice of council there, the Carcor Town Reservoir. Once we were getting that relined and when that work was done, we found it was in slightly worse condition than expected.
Yep.
So the cost came in at $17,700, greater than what we expected.
Okay.
So we had to take that from the reserve to done so.
Fair enough. Any questions of Peter on those variations? One issue which just when you mentioned the assets officer tweaked my thoughts that how are we going with the, I think the ads closed for that?
Yeah, applications are closed. We had around four or five I think five applications. So that's now with the review panel being Noel, Peter and Debbie Turner.
Yep.
And they were going through the applications. So
oh, that's good.
Yeah, to do that. And also the governor's executive support officer closed a week later and closed last Friday.
So good applications.
We have first.
That's good. Yeah. But the assets office is going to be important for this project we talked about earlier, I would think, because that's
the main artery project.
That's the bread and butter of what an assets office will do, know where the assets are.
Yeah.
Through the chair, we've taken on board training our internal staff on certain aspects of the asset management as well, so we're not reliant on one person, and that's provided good benefits of our own internal network operators now seeing what can be done with our asset modules, rather than the asset officer providing what they thought would be good for us.
Mm.
So it's been a worthwhile exercise. It certainly is a shame to lose the Calvin as our asset officer, but that's what we've had. But there are gains now that we can see because we are taking the onus of the asset officer. They will have to be trained up, of course, but we have started the process of training internal staff to do and take a bit of responsibility of that.
Okay, so the job description for the new assets officer is not quite the same as
it was. It'll be the same.
Yeah.
But what we're saying is we're not just going to rely on the asset officer to do all. It's too important.
The internal backup.
We will have the resources of knowledge to be able to support the asset officer as we roll out.
And as Noel said, it will provide the operators too with more information and more ownership and
how they can see the
appreciation of what's required. So, especially with the GIS system, because we're so spread out.
We can get more out of the asset officer to assist Peter with all of the reporting and just delving in and concentrating on that rather than having to look at the data. So we have taken back intermediate.
All right, that was a bit of a side issue, but it did come up from what Peter said about the assets officer.
Yep.
Any more questions for Peter?
I was just going to ask one, but the one that we had the photos of the pump station that's got.
Yes.
So does that come into December QBRS? Like, do you need to do changes there?
We need to. We're currently looking at that with our insurer. Unfortunately, because of the flood deductible, it looks like we're basically self-insured on that one. Although there was a session that I did with Statewide this morning where we're looking at various avenues to see what we can do. But there certainly will be an infrastructure asset write off for the balance of the residual value of the pump station, yes.
Is that very much?
I'm not sure exactly what that figure is. We had the insured value was 163,000. I'm not sure what the residual value of it was.
Well, that comes off the P&L account, doesn't it? Will we write that off?
It will.
Impaired asset or something?
Yeah, it'll be a
very impaired asset.
It'll probably be a disposal.
But we've got to build another one.
Yeah.
So we'll take that up in the December QBRS.
Once we get an asset officer on board, I'll get an accurate written down value to look at that. Yeah. If it's not in the December one, which will be due in February, it'll probably be in the March one.
Okay. That's a good point. Yeah. Any other questions? No? Those in favour? Thank you. 12.11, adopting the concealed leaks policy. So I'd like to move that. Councillor Rawson, Councillor Best, thank you. All those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you, that's carried. The next one, 12.12, the ARIC committee minutes. Someone like to move that? Councillor Ewan, seconded. Councillor Rawson, any questions of Gavin in relation? Well, Peter, can I answer to that? No. Those in favour?
All right.
It's carried. Then move on to 12, 13, which is listed for the moment.
Performance of Custodial Systems.
12, 13, yes, page 53, Performance of the Systems. Someone like to move that we note that information. Oh, Councillor Rawson, thank you. Councillor Cook is nodding, thank you. Questions of Noel in relation to this one?
This is up to the 30th. Oh, so, okay, so this is right up to after the major flood events.
Correct.
Yeah, it's got a note there. Under you go. Got a little red asterisk.
Yep. Yes, I see now. Yeah. No questions. I'll put that. Those in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. The next one, 12-14, maintenance of the system. Someone like to move that one? Councillor Best, Councillor Ewan, thank you. Any comments of Noel in relation to this?
No, it's all looks fine.
No,
it's no. Well, it's all good news, basically, isn't it? I mean, there's no
wear and tear.
There's the odd, yeah.
Okay. Put that, those in favour.
Right.
Thank you. 12-15. Water security drought impact update. Again, I'm going to ask someone to move that. Councillor Cook. Councillor Rawson, thank you. Questions for Noel in relation to that one?
So we're still on track with the 12 megalitre tank. Mm-hmm. We've still got a big platform ready and waiting.
February, yes. I spoke with the successful contractor just to get an update on that. So they're still believing that they will meet the June target of this financial year to have all of the construction completed, and that's where all the money is, if you like. The commissioning and things, a phase of it may be delayed and be extended, but the cash and the money, the drive for that is to ensure that we take advantage of the grants and we don't lose any of those grant funding.
Was the site impacted by the rains at all? I know it's on the side of a hill, but you just...
It has, and we've had to actually spend some money in trying to do some restoration of our drainage. We've had a slip come through up top, so it's had water behind it, so we've had to spend some money on cleaning the drains, getting, moving that dirt that has slipped down and moving that away. I haven't put that into this project because I think that's additional. It's outside of this project.
Yeah.
And it's more of a maintenance that we would do if it was
better now than
after. Yeah, I suppose if we were totally grant funded, yes, we might be able to slip it in. But,
yes. Mm-hmm. So I've put this in now because we are getting close to spending money. So before I hadn't put it in, but now we're moving into it. Mm-hmm. And the next project as well. Oh, sorry, no,
before we go on to the next project, this particular one, are there any flood impacts or stormwater impacts on the road going into the site?
No, it stood up very well. The access road that we spend as much money on as we did, that access road has held up very well.
I think Phil Timber Road.
Phil Timber Road
is it on this?
Yes.
Okay, well, that was the question I was really aiming for, was actually Phil Timber Road. Because if it's in a mess, that's going to impact on the movement of
concrete. Yes, a bridge that's been washed out at Manjurama too, so that could also affect the pathway.
Which is one of the reasons Phil Timber Road is looking terrible, because Lynch's Bridge on the Manjurama to Neville Road, called Manjurama Road, has been washed undermined, and so that road is closed. And the only other way around, including for a lot of heavy vehicles, is to go along Filter Road.
Okay.
So that's getting a lot of heavy use at the moment. Right. And, yeah.
So which council area would this be in? which council do we need to be putting pressure on to maintain Fell Timber Road to a sufficient standard to allow a large number of cement trucks to go and...
Yeah, no, that's a good point, because it is an issue. We'll have Mandurah Road reopened by Christmas, I think, mm-hmm. Which will take all the extra traffic off Fell Timber Road. Then we've got to concentrate on getting Fell Timber Road fixed. Yeah.
But so with the pour, when does the pour happen again? When was it decided it was going to happen?
In February. Yes.
So that's going to have to happen well before then.
But we do need to get site sheds and things like that onto the site before that pour, of course. So we're looking at bringing that through in January to get the facilities in, have it set up so it's ready.
Will they talk to Blaney Council directly to make sure all of the road is in sufficient standing?
I'm sure that I will be able to report back if there's any issues to Blaney Shire Council.
Yeah, well, I just thought we'd, you know.
No, I think.
I'm looking around. What am I actually saying is?
Surrounded, Andrew. No, I think we probably need to be proactive because Blaney Council wouldn't be aware of this potential imminent additional usage. And they're busy programming, like all councils at the moment, prioritising what needs to be fixed first. Mm. This is a very good reason why wherever Fell Timber Road sits on the hierarchy of get to it as quickly as can, this will suggest it needs to be elevated. So I'm happy to take it up, and Alan will take it up. It would be useful at a management level if you were to speak to Mark or to Jacob Hogan, the infrastructure guy, and see if we can
make him aware.
I would suggest once Mandurah Road's been reopened and all the extra traffic goes off, that's when they need to get onto it.
And we'll put in Hills Lane as well.
I was just going to ask the chairman that should be...
Yeah, they always hit a four-wheel drive to get up there, don't you? Yeah.
That's shocking, isn't it?
It's better when it's dry. It's not for hours better. When it's wet,
we have a council workshop on Monday up there. I need to put it into four-wheel. There's that one patch where it's just mud.
You just sink down there.
It's just incredible.
So we do need access to our water treatment plant operators on Hills Lane.
Mm.
We definitely need that, and that's 7 days a week.
Mm.
Yeah.
And just one other question on the 12-meter reservoir. There's no... indication, no flagging of the variations might be looming?
No. Famous last words.
We've got 45,000.
Very kind.
Okay. Any more questions on that drought report? No questions. Those in favour?
Aye.
Carried. Now we get to the renewable energy projects, 12.16. Someone like to move we note that report? Mm-hmm. Councillor Best, Councillor Cook, thank you. Any questions?
No.
Is the remaining funds just a contingency, or is it just the extra 30,000 we've got? That's just you leaving it as a contingency?
Correct. Yes. Starting to build up of our prices. So, if you recall that council voted for 500k to do three sites that we had identified, and because I'm only using two sites, I've tried to be pro rata for the two sites that we're doing out of that 500, and that's where I've come up with that price of 360k for the two.
Yep.
So that story leaves us 140k to do Lake Rollins, which is looking at the prices that we have to do these other two is consistent with what we're having.
So that revised budget, does that include the charge works fee for managing it?
Yes.
You got to keep on it, don't you? Because it's the technology changes so fast with the length at all. Nice. There's a new one now they're using the solar panels. They're reflecting off one solar panel onto the back, and the other solar panels actually charges both sides.
Is that right?
The reflection actually creates more. Oh, good. It's constantly changing.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Any more questions on that? No. Thanks for the report. Those in favour?
No.
It's Gary. Thank you. 13, questions on notice? I think we've had no questions on notice. 14, we go into confidential closed session. Someone like to move that? Yep. Councillor Best, Councillor Cook, those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you.
We need to switch off the
microphone.
Okay. So we'll be back. We'll go quick, and it'll be a recording down here.
Yeah.
And then we just go.
We are back in open session, and I'd like to report on the decision of council in closed meeting. The resolution was that the information be noted and that the increase in the general manager's total remuneration package as recommended by the review panel be approved, effective from 12 August 2022 being the commencement date of his new contract. That now closes the business of this meeting, and I declare it closed.